And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
If this happened in Argentina, maybe people die. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they said, we're moving it to Rosario.
Yeah. Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affle drives forward. Affle scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade.com. Hit it up. We are back, and we've got Patrick Gouldan with us this week. Patrick, how you doing, sir?
Not too bad today.
Excellent. Glad to have you back with us. We've also got Alex Stanek returning after a slight hiatus. Alex, good to have you, sir.
Thank you. Good to be back. Just got back from Walt Disney World, fighting off a little bit of a cough. Thanks to all of the children there for coughing and not covering that cough. But I am here.
If there's going to be like a ground zero for a zombie outbreak or something, it's got to be Walt Disney World. That place is filled with all sorts of creepy crawlies. And then finally, we've got Sam Fahmy on the ones and twos. Sam, how you doing, sir?
You know, I was having a good night until I heard Alex went to Walt Disney World, and now I want to go to Walt Disney World.
It was so good. It was so good. Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, guys. Go ride it. It's fun.
You are a bad human being.
Well, while Alex was having fun at the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train over the weekend, we tried to have a little fun of ourselves. The crew at least tried, and unfortunately, probably a little bit more of an unsatisfying result than that ride was for Alex, a 0-0 draw. Patrick Gouldan, what was there, you know, to take away from this game? What, you know, this is the Philadelphia team that, you know, coming in, I think most of us had picked Columbus to win this game. Of course, they were coming off that disappointing loss in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, but it looked like Columbus could never really get it going, at least, you know, not at 100% Saturday.
Yeah, so Philly had a game plan and intensity, and Columbus had a game plan, and they didn't match the intensity. It was a case where Philly was in the fifth game of 2 weeks, so a murder schedule, a lot of travel, you know, trips to Seattle and Houston in there, and they came prepared before they got to Columbus. They had a lot of 9 out of their 11 were returning after that Open Cup midweek loss, and you know they came in with a midfield press. You know, they let Columbus play out of the back a little bit, but then, you know, they were very aggressive in the midfield, and that really disrupted the dynamism and the attack of Columbus. You know, there were a couple spots where, you know, Columbus begins to transition. I think there were a couple diagonals that really worked well, that kind of created a few things. But, you know, this is a game that had two shots on goal the entire game. You know, so that kind of speaks to how both teams played. You know, Columbus was very tidy at the back for the most part, and Philadelphia was aggressive about playing defense. I think the one key coming out of this game is in the first half, the system works, because Lawless really had a tough night with Corey Burke, you know, their big physical forward, and he got into a little bit of a trouble in the 36th minute, you know, a long direct pass up to Burke there, and he takes it down and gets one-on-one with Stefan and then cuts it across, and Mensah stabs the ball, you know, maybe trying to protect the back post in case there's somebody running there, and turns it into his own net. And, you know, initially the goal stood, and then they turned it over to VAR, and luckily for Columbus, it was overturned. There was a little bit of a push. Lawless fell down on the play, and you know, Columbus was kind of bailed out from that. You know, these are fouls that could have gone either way, but it really, Columbus looked out of ideas until, you know, the second half when they made some interesting substitutions. Lawless was an early sub in the second half. Nico Hansen replaced a fairly ineffective Pedro Santos. And I think the most surprising thing was Eduardo Sosa as a straight swap for Federico Higuain in the 71st minute. After the game, I asked Berhalter directly about this, and he said, you know, we were looking to change the intensity. And I think that Columbus had their two shots on goal in the 79th and 90th minute, and that was after both of their offensive designated players had already left the field. This team has been struggling to find goals. Sometimes the shots are there. This time they were completely shut down, and it really showed how much struggle there was when they didn't have the right options.
How does that bode for, you know, by all intents, it looks like that this is going to be the matchup that Columbus has in the playoffs. These teams seem to be pretty much locked in at 4 and 5. And if Philadelphia is going to play in a in whether, you know, Philadelphia may end up leapfrogging the Crew and hosting in that play-in game, but if they're going to play in such a sort of smothering way and, you know, Federico Higuain can't really get anything going. Of course, Pedro looked pretty anemic. Justin Miram looked like, you know, he looked like he was looking for someone else to score, was passing balls that, you know, you were used to seeing him take shots with. It certainly isn't an encouraging, I guess, dress rehearsal for what looks like a very likely playoff matchup.
Yeah, it's a case where Philadelphia and Columbus really match up fairly evenly. Jim Curtin, I think, is a little bit of an underrated coach within MLS circles. He really prepares his teams, and I think he finally has some talent on this team to really kind of make some noise. I think the big thing to come out of this is that Columbus also should know how they can really attack the Union. What it really hinges on is when the Union start to play physical and start to play with that midfield press, that there are options, and it really comes down to the thing Berhalter says every game that they really start to struggle. But it's apparent is that, one, they need to make sure their spacing is right so that they have the proper links, because, you know, on Saturday they were awfully spread out at times. So, you know, any lost ball, any turnover, it was a quick turnover right to the Union. They picked up a lot of those loose balls without any, you know, without a contest. And then once the spacing is right, you have the proper passing angles. And when it worked best, it was diagonals. It's really being able to be prepared for knowing what Philadelphia is going to bring, because this team does have an extra gear. Gosh, like a car that has a failing clutch, they so often struggle to find that gear and just kind of get stuck in neutral. And really what it comes down to is you have to have a Federico Higuain on his game, because those best moments really came from him making those passes. And if you're going to have somebody who plays a very, very tough midfield block like the Union do, that's where the attack's going to come from.
I think on the flip side, you can look at it if you want to look it through, you know, black and gold tinted sunglasses. It's 6 straight unbeaten at home for Columbus. You've got Zach Steffen, who picked up his 10th shutout of the season, already eclipsing his total from last year. Shutout clean sheet. So certainly some, I guess, encouraging it. And you know, when you look at the grand scheme of things, the playoff standings, you know, no movement isn't, at least Philly doesn't, you know, gain any ground on you if you're Columbus. And even with the goal differential or anything like that, they've still got the advantage there, as well as that 1 point advantage on Philadelphia in the standings. But it seemed like there's, I think, an ability for this team to clinch that playoff spot. We did see NYCFC lock it down with their win over the weekend, and I think there's a little bit of a controversy, Patrick, surrounding, you know, Crew's ability to potentially clinch that spot, and where Greg Berhalter and some of his players may have landed on that.
Yeah, that was an interesting comment he made after the game. You know, so I believe it was Andrew Erickson, if memory serves, that asked him a little bit about being able to clinch, and what needed to happen was the Montreal Impact needed to lose and Columbus needed to win. The Impact certainly did lose 5-0 to DC, but Columbus wasn't able to get the 3 points that would have secured them the playoffs. And Greg has always been a very much a one game at a time, we're keeping an even keel type coach. You never hear him talk about anything really in the future other than what's on the next Saturday or the next game day. So he has never really been about bulletin board material or, you know, achievements that you can look at like that. The flip side of that, the odd thing was that Zach Steffen was asked the same question, and he had mentioned that he had heard it the day before, the Friday before the game, that, oh yeah, it's a possibility that the Crew could clinch. And he thought it was odd that it wasn't a bigger deal, that they couldn't use this as a motivation to close out the game. And it's rare that there's any sort of daylight between how the players approach things and the coach approaches things. So any sort of amount of daylight is a little bit interesting. Is that a thing? Is that a controversy on this team? Probably not. I think it's just a minor little bit of a disagreement in how to approach things, but still it shows maybe some sort of mentality that might not be quite as sharp as maybe Greg Berhalter thought. Speaking of sharp championship winning mentalities, so with the 2008 Cup celebration for what it was, which, you know, had people standing in front of the 12,000 assembled at halftime and having a brief video interlude, it was kind of depressing actually. But you did have Robert Rozia and you did have Ziggy Schmidt there, and Ziggy actually spoke to the team after the game to talk to him about what it takes to win a championship and what it takes for a team to come together and actually achieve something like that. So it was kind of a Ziggy Schmidt pep talk for this team that what mentality is really necessary to finish out a season with a championship like the 2008 team did. So, you know, that was one thing that I guess if there's a mentality issue, perhaps there's already the solution in that Ziggy gave a little pep talk about championship mentality.
You know, I think the other thing is it might actually be a ruse on behalf of the Crew and the players to try to devalue Greg Berhalter as a potential option for the U.S. men's national team so they can keep him here in Columbus. Now, I don't think that's the case, but it's certainly I feel like we've been, and we don't need to, you know, dwell on it and belabor it too much more. But again, this team, doesn't look like it's getting going as Greg Berhalter teams have shown in the past to do. And with three games remaining, they look to be locked in the playoff picture, but certainly not looking like a season, at least right now. They put it together for spurts, maybe a couple games, but it doesn't even look like they're playing like the sum of their parts most of the times, let alone beyond that, which is what you need to do if you're going to be a championship caliber team.
Yeah, and I wonder if some of this is just kind of that missing gear that we were speaking about earlier. I think that given everything that's going on in Columbus, when the playoffs get here, you're going to see that tenacity kind of come out. You're going to see that kind of cornered animal come out in each of those players. That's what I hope anyway. I think we're going to see a level of desire from our team that's not really going to be rivaled by anybody else in the league. Whether that's enough or not, we'll have to wait and see. For me at this stage, I want to see everybody stay healthy. I want to see them try to play cohesive soccer. I'm not sure they've been able to put together really impressive performances recently. And that's definitely concerning, but the pieces are all there. I mean, they have a team that's capable of going places. I think the one kind of question mark for me on this team is still Pedro Santos. I'm not sure if he's the guy. I'm not sure if he's not the guy. If you just go with Hansen, if you try to mix things up a little bit, it's kind of late in the season to do something like that. So maybe you just kind of ride it out with him. But overall, yeah, it's definitely not a team that's kind of setting the world on fire right now. But I do think they have the potential to if they kind of buckle down and just want it more than anybody else. A lot of that's going to come from the fans. I think the city is going to come out in droves for this team in the playoffs. The fans are behind this team 110%. I think hopefully there'll be some positive developments for the crew. You never know. But that would certainly be a boost as well. So we'll have to wait and see how everything plays out. But I think the ingredients are there. They're not kind of put together yet. We'll have to wait and see.
So I think that as far as total efforts and complete games from the offense, no. I think that's apparent. But I do think that that's underselling the ability of the defense to really shut down teams. So Zach Steffen has 10 shutouts, but he's faced something like 50 shots, which is unbelievably low. So he organizes a very good defense. Jonathan Mensah has been from pretty darn good to great at times. The rotating cast beside him with either Lawless or Josh Williams has been enough during those games. And then you have Awful and then Milton Valenzuela, perhaps best defensive left back in the league. And you have two great shielders like in Artur and Will Trapp to be able to perform that two-way kind of defense there. And then the one place where Santos really does shine is in the little things in one, he's solid in possession, but two, he's an excellent defensive asset, much like Justin Miram on the other side. So, and then up top, there's a lot of commitment from Zardes and Higuain to close down early if that's required. So I think that if there's anything that really is this team's signature, and this is strange for a Berhalter team, is that this is a very good defensive team that can shut down a lot of very good offenses and can grind out results. Now, if they can find those offensive flourishes, if those things can kind of come together, then yeah, this team can make a run.
You know, one guy who there at least doesn't seem to be any much doubt of his motivations was Captain Will Trapp, who had some notable changes to his decor for the game. A customized captain's armband that across the facade it showed the different crests of all the different supporters groups that are part of the Nord that make up the Nordeca. And it seemed like one of those, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter excited about it throughout the day. And it did seem like a little message of defiance from the captain, even if it's just, you know, by saying I'm supportive of the local supporters and that are obviously on the front lines of the Save the Crew movement. What do you guys take away from that? What are the thoughts? I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, I think it's a very telling move by Trapp. He's very measured when he talks. He's always very considerate about what message he's sending. He's spoken up about the difficulties that the fans have had recently, especially with the actions in Austin. And he was one of the first players to mention the fact that there was something going on with this team, which has been not really talked about in league circles at all. It's like it's something that doesn't actually exist. This is the next step. You can't come out and wear a big Save the Crew armband, but I think the subtext is clear. He is supportive of Columbus soccer in every action that he has taken throughout his career, from academy to playing for his hometown team, and showing support for the fans. And yes, probably going beyond that and saying he wishes the team could stay here forever. He's going to do everything he can to show it. So it's a little bit of a surprise to see it, but coming from Will Trapp, it really should have been, because there's a reason why there's a lot of players who think he's the best captain they ever played for, because he always sends the right message.
Well, and I also think that this whole thing is kind of interesting in the sense that if you're Anthony Precourt and you're seeing things like this from Will Trapp, do you really think that you can take a player like that to Austin? If he's kind of openly saying that he hates all this, or at least as open as he can be.
Yeah.
So then what happens? What do you do in a situation like that? He is the captain of the U.S. men's national team. You're going to probably lose him either way. I don't think he's going to want to stay in Austin. You might be able to get him through the length of his contract, but my guess is his agent's going to be like, you know what, Mr. Precourt, you should probably trade my client literally to anyone else. We don't care if it's in the U.S. or overseas, but we want to trade. So I think that is a good sign for, say, the Crew to a degree. Zach Steffen and Will Trapp are kind of the two prized possessions of this team in terms of from a value standpoint. If one of them wants to leave, that's great. If both of them do, that's probably even better. Zach Steffen has been pretty open about his support of Save the Crew throughout the entire process. He was liking tweets that said Save the Crew basically as soon as the hashtag started. So I wonder what the private conversations are going on between the players and people within the front office of the Crew. Without knowing any details, I would imagine that the players are more frank behind closed doors than they are in public about things. And if they don't want to go, that's certainly concerning. And that would be more indication that, hey, maybe at this point your best option, Mr. Precourt, is to just sell the team locally. If there are buyers around, sell to them. Start a brand new franchise in Austin, Texas, and go from there.
Well, he'll certainly have, whenever his brand new franchise is ready to begin in Austin, Texas, and it looks like it's going to be harder and harder for them to do that in 2019. But they'll have a brand new supporters group, authentic, ready to go for this team. In the Austin anthem that were released last week, and I don't want to talk about the goings on in Austin any more than to touch on the brief thing that came up over Twitter for a while, which is that Crew fans apparently were receiving emails to attend a get together to celebrate the launch of this new existing, totally organic a supporter group that it came together on its own over the weekend, Sam.
Oh, there we go. So I'm definitely not a season ticket holder, obviously. However, I thought it was funny that Andrew Erickson tweeted out that a PSV spokesman that said that denied vehemently that they sent this to Crew fans. And I'm like, okay, you can deny this all you want, but the number of people that actually have physical proof, and it's not like it's hard to go back and trace your electronic records to figure out that you did send it to Crew fans. So you can deny it all you want. The fact is, you continue to be bad at businessing, and the fact that MLS is still letting this go on almost a year into this is an embarrassment to the sport of soccer in the United States. It is an embarrassment to Major League Soccer as an organization. Even more so, it is an embarrassment to U.S. soccer that they have not stepped in and actually done something at this point. And I don't know how much U.S. soccer, not that they have any powers in MLS or not that they have any powers over MLS, but this is making American soccer coast to coast, border to border, an embarrassment in front of the rest of the world.
Well, my favorite thing about this whole Austin Anthem thing is the name. I don't think the name has gotten enough attention, and the name to me is hilariously bad. It's very early MLS team name quality. It feels like Don Garber had a list of cheesy 1998 possible MLS names, and he was like, "Oh, Austin Anthem, let's just reuse that one."
Because of the alliteration.
Yeah.
Imagine if they used, remember when the names were registered and Austin Athletic was one of them? Like, as a possible team name?
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if they would have used that.
Yeah, I feel like this was...
I'm surprised they didn't, because that would be cheaper for them, and everything else has been... They already have trademarked.
It feels like Anthony Precourt was presented with a list of 5 possible names for his team. He picked option 1, which was Austin FC. And then when he was trying to figure out the name for the supporters group, he just went down one on the list and was like, "Oh, let's just do that one." And then just went back to, skiing or whatever the heck he's doing right now. It just feels very kind of half-hearted and low effort, which is super on brand for PSV. And throughout this entire process, they've just been kind of like, "Yeah, let's just do that." And so not surprising. We'll see how long this lasts before they change the name. I kind of think the whole Austin FC thing might get a rebrand at some point too. I can't see that being super successful. There's of course the 5 people on there who like to do L Tree, TREE, and think it's super clever. I don't know. I think this whole branding thing has been awful.
I think it just threw up a little bit of my mouth on that last one.
It's bad. It's bad. Yeah. The whole thing is just really, it just shouts, college, business project kind of stuff. I mean, it's not high end. It's not super well done. It's not super well thought out. It looks like everything that they've done in this whole process was thrown together the night before it was due. And I don't know. Austin Anthem. That's the actual name. So, pretty, pretty sad. Although, is it worse or better than Third Rail? Because Third Rail to me is still super dumb for New York City FC. Because they were just like trying to come up with some sort of a New York themed thing. They're like, "Oh,
edgy.
Let's don't reference the Third Rail." Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's do the subway. Yeah, pretty dumb. So there are a lot of dumb names in the league, to be fair to Austin. But yeah, that one's pretty bad.
It certainly was something, man. It's still just surreal to see all of this happening. And of course, we're in a kind of no news is no news right now cycle. Still waiting to hear back on the court case. I tend to be of the thought that if we're not hearing anything, that means they're negotiating some form of a settlement. We'll see what that may be. But right now, fellas, do you think, is there any, what can we expect? Can we expect to see any developments anytime soon? Is it just, do you think there's, one thing or a couple things holding up? Is there a single domino that needs to fall down to get this all going? Or is it just, a crapshoot right now? Let's get solved, get a resolution, whatever that may be.
I think it's a case where we don't necessarily see everything that's going on, and Columbus isn't going to negotiate out in the open. PSV might not be negotiating out in the open, and MLS isn't negotiating out in the open. And how they resolve this, it may seem obvious one course of action or another. I think plowing forward in Austin, I think the best case for that is momentum. Second best case for that is, working with business partners. But, PSV hasn't really shown aptitude in that in the past. So, you know, it's a possibility that they have people to please in Austin, and so they're pushing forward. But then again, on the Columbus side, it's, you know, as long as you're negotiating, you don't have to run out to the press. And so, you know, maybe this is a case where my thought is no news is no news, but, you know, if you have things trying to build, like in a court case, I don't think a judge is really going to want to jump in if he's still seeing the things he wants to have happen. So, you know, he has time. He doesn't necessarily need to run out and publish his decision on the case right now, when it really isn't necessary. And the only reason why it wouldn't really be necessary is that people are still talking enough. How much that is, you know, maybe we'll find out when the book's written.
I am just ready to, you know, finish and close the book on this entire ordeal. And let's just get over with. Let's save the crew. Let Austin, the Alex Stanek route. Give them an expansion team, whatever. We'll forget about them until they show up in 2021, and then we'll just beat the pants off of them every year. But until then, we'll just have to wait and keep our ears to the floor. There is a little bit of news coming out though today, and that's the selection for the U.S. men's national team for the upcoming round of games. And once again, we're seeing Zach Steffen and Will Trapp in the lineup. But you're seeing also a couple of, a couple of the old vets returning in Mike Bradley and Brad Guzan. And, of course, Guzan's reappearance on this roster sparked some questions. You know, is this still Zach Steffen's U.S. men's national team, or is Guzan here, for to get that kind of veteran presence?
I think that's one of my big questions about this is where Steffen is. I'm, and we'll find this out pretty quickly. I think Steffen's the number one. I think Guzan's there to see how he compares. But Steffen really hasn't shown anything to say, no, he's not. And then the other one is where Will Trapp ranks up, because you have Weston McKennie, you have Tyler Adams that play maybe a little bit more forward mm-hmm. than Trapp. And then you have Michael Bradley. And I'm, you know, Michael Bradley's role going forward, that'll be interesting. But you know, those are the direct competitors. It's Will Trapp and Michael Bradley. And what do you hope to get out of Bradley's appearance that you're not getting out from Trapp, but you're bringing Trapp back rather than bringing in, say, a DC United player who might be busy over the break. So I think it's interesting. And then of course, you know, Jossy Zardes is not called back in, and you chose to go with Novakovic, Sargent, and Wood as your three forwards. So is it some rest? Is it seeing some other people and getting some playing time? I think those are the interesting questions.
I just hope that U.S. men's national team sticks with the vets for these games. I hope that give Zach, the time off, give Will the time off, put 180 minutes on Michael Bradley's legs, put Brad Guzan in there. You know, you can always decide to go against that after the playoffs are over and after we've won MLS Cup. But until then, you know, just give them a little bit of rest, you know, give them the week off, have them do training for sure, but no injuries, no game time. And that'd be fine by me. I'd be okay with that in October. And then they can go back into things in December.
At this pace, you know, any more playing time by Steffen on the national team really only goes to solidify that he's probably more than likely gone next year to somewhere in Europe, and especially if he continues to play well. So I think I'm okay with that. Yeah, let Trapp rest. We kind of need him for this last stretch of games, and yeah, let's go.
Oh, I can't wait to see Michael Bradley, who's been playing center back terribly like the whole season, just lining up there in that attacking. No, at least they're not playing in the attacking role, but still, I mean, I don't know how it angers me that guys like that. I think we should still just get rid of all of them. I'd rather just have a whole bunch of really young, raw guys and give them some of the opportunities there. Bradley is, you know, with his attitude, with the fact that he's just over the hill and you know, turned down better competition to just come back to North America and, you know, get comfortable and collect a paycheck. And while I don't fault that to you as a personal decision, as a player that I want, you know, as really the linchpin for this U.S. men's national team in the position, that's not the sort of attitude that you want to see.
For a friendly, I'm okay with them getting a run out and, you know, having their swan song or whatever. I hope that's how they play this. I hope they make it a thing where they're never playing for the national team again, to be honest with you. Michael Bradley is going to be 35 years old, or very close to it, within a month of turning 35 by the time the next World Cup rolls around. The next World Cup is going to be in the Middle East, in a very hot climate. And it's going to be stressful on even young players, but I don't think we want a 35-year-old center midfielder trying to dictate the pace of play for our team. Brad Guzan, I think, is going to be, what, 38, something like that? So 37, 38. So, yeah, I mean, move on. We have to build a team that can actually qualify for the World Cup. We didn't do it last time. I don't think this gets talked about enough. We did not qualify for the last World Cup. That's horrible. And so, yeah, throw them all out. I'm done with that entire group of players for the most part. Anybody that you don't think is going to be ready 4 years from now, get rid of them. And those two are not going to be here. So, you know, give them their farewell in friendlies this year. And then, you know, start building this team for the future. And, you know, build now. Don't wait until a year out and then try to throw the pieces together.
So I think the one thing is so Bradley, that run really kind of made my head scratch a little bit, because at 31, I wouldn't necessarily say he has a big role to play going forward, because I don't think he's necessarily head and shoulders a number one ahead of the competition now. I can't find the article. It's kind of killing me. There was a comparison between Will Trapp and Michael Bradley as far as captain of the national team. So Will Trapp has under 10 caps. All but two of them have come this year. He has been captain in every single game in 2018 that he has appeared. So even though he is a relatively newcomer to the national team, he doesn't have a lot of caps. The response from the group has been, it's Captain Will Trapp. He's the guy. There was a not necessarily standoffishness, not necessarily an attitude problem, but Michael Bradley wasn't apparently approachable. And I don't think that's necessarily something that you really want to reintroduce at this time. You know, if he wasn't necessarily approachable because, you know, there was this mystique or there was this ambience around him that, you know, you couldn't necessarily turn to him. Don't bring that back in. The one player who I did think that might still have a role to play for this team is Jozy Altidore. He kind of, I don't know if he was snubbed. The U.S. Soccer Federation said that there was injury concerns with Altidore, which it always seems like there's injury concerns with Altidore. But he tweeted tweeted essentially "ha ha" or something like that, and I don't think he bought the fact that was the cover story. So if he was injured, he didn't get the memo. And I kind of wonder what his future is with the team, because this isn't necessarily a group that we're stacked at forward, that the national team has a bunch of options compared to, say, goalkeeper, or compared to, say, defensive midfielder, where there's options that haven't gotten a look, like Russell Knuth from DC, who's kind of a bulldog, and he's 23, 24. And then you have Trapp, who can play that deep-lying playmaker if that's the role you're looking for. So I'm the Bradley one's kind of a head scratcher from a lot of different angles.
I just wonder if some of this with the friendlies is, hey, let's get guys from really popular teams in here so that we can sell shirts. I don't know if that's the case or not, but when I saw that Brad Guzan and Michael Bradley got called up, that's what jumped to mind for me is, oh, they're going for Atlanta and Toronto fans. This is totally off topic, but when I was in Disney World, I think I saw one or two Orlando City shirts the entire week I was there. I was seeing four or five Atlanta United shirts every day. It was crazy. And I did bump into a Crew fan, by the way. Shout out to Patrick and his family. We talked Save the Crew in line for a Tomorrowland, the race cars down there. But yeah, that's the only thing that makes sense to me is, hey, maybe try to get that money. That's all they do with the friendlies anyways. They charge an arm and a leg for tickets for a meaningless game. And so might as well try to sell some shirts as well.
And my only hope is that it is just like the final appearance for both Bradley and Guzan before putting those guys out to pasture. And yeah, they said, let's do it now. We'll give them their little farewell tour without actually giving them all the pomp and circumstances, something like they would have done for, Deuce Landon. Although I guess Landon Donovan is rather unceremonious when he was dropped. But I digress. We do have to get back to happenings on here in the field. In MLS and in the U.S. and in Canada as well, as that's where the Crew are going to find themselves this weekend, taking on the Montreal Impact, a Montreal team who's kind of gotten their act together a little bit of late, but still they look to be locked in. Not quite. I think DC's got the games in hand. Yes, they do, on Montreal. So just slugging it out for that final playoff position. But that means you're going to see a team, in Montreal that feels like that it's a must win for them, because in reality it is. And for Columbus, again, if you want to try to lock down that number four seed, get at least a home game guaranteed, it's as close to a must win as it can get for you. So suddenly this game, it's a Montreal game that probably in summer, even a couple months ago, didn't look like it was going to be a big game, and suddenly now here it is.
Yeah, I think that if you look at anything that was the most damaging from the Union game, is that this was a chance to really lock down that four spot. They're still in a fairly good position, but this week, Columbus heads to Montreal, which isn't necessarily a gimme. That's a good team up there that can have their moments. They're certainly up and down. They're certainly down compared to what DC did to them last week, but they created chances. They didn't finish chances. Whereas Philadelphia hosts Minnesota United, and Minnesota United has not been great on the road all year. So now you have a chance where you flip that, and all of a sudden Columbus is in fifth and Philly is in fourth, because you're talking about needing to get a result in Montreal. And even beyond that, I think a win is kind of a must given how the Union are playing and given who the Union are playing this week.
Minnesota just a 1-12 record on the road so far this season. Abysmal from Minnesota United. But you're right, guys, a Montreal team that is a must win, isn't it, Alex?
Yeah, I think it is. And if you I didn't catch the game, but I caught the highlights of the DC United Montreal game. Their defending looked shocking. If you didn't see the score of that game, they lost 5-0 to DC United, and they just were all over the place. Their back line was all over the place. And if they play that way against the Crew, we're going to tear them to shreds. They will just get exploited over and over again by our attacking team that we have. Even our attacking midfield, I think, will just, carve them up. So they're going to have to be better. They have been better in recent weeks. If this DC United game was just kind of a fluke, we may see them really get their act together and be a tough opponent for us. But yeah, if we play the team that DC United played, it is going to be a rout. We are going to absolutely destroy them. But yeah, I doubt that's the team we're going to face. I think it's going to be tight.
All right. Well, I think we'll, unless Patrick, if you've got any other analysis for preview, I think we'll quick give a shout out to our sponsors and then get some
some picks and wrap this one up early tonight. We're recording a little bit late, and it's getting close to bedtime. Any objections?
Done here.
I'll take that as a yes. So again, a big shout out to our friend at the Old North Arcade. There we go. Good talking, Bart. 2591 North High Street and online at oldnortharcade.com. First up, we've got Patrick Gould. And what are we seeing from Columbus in Montreal?
I think that this is a team that, again, they can defend well. They really struggle on the road to score. So I think this is really a grind them out. The way that Columbus can win this one is they pick out the weak spots. Montreal is going to break in transition. So you really have to figure out how you can stop them from when they break in transition and then counter that attack. So controlling possession may not be the best way, and whatever the coaching staff comes up with to really kind of prepare the team is going to be how this game plays out. Ultimately, I think it's going to be a slugfest, a tight one, and a 1-1 draw. Columbus doesn't get what they want, and Montreal doesn't either, because DC is right behind them.
A draw on the road from Patrick Gould and Sam Fahmy. What you got?
I'm kind of torn between Patrick's logic and Alex's optimism. But they really need to get 3 points in this game and get this whole playoff scenario, you know, kind of done with. So, I don't know. Montreal could come out of this game with DC United and go make major changes, kind of throw something at the crew that they don't know and haven't seen before, and that could cause a problem. But also, if they don't have people to fill in those positions, then they got what they got. So I'm actually going to be slightly more optimistic than Patrick. I will go with a win and the 3 points at a 2-1.
2-1 win from Sam. I like it. Alex, what you got?
I'm also going to say 2-1. Piatti, for whatever reason, always seems to hurt Columbus. So I think he'll at least have the assist on the Montreal goal, if not scored himself. But I think the crew will get it done. I think they know that they need to get it done. I think that this is that part of the season where they're going to start kicking it into that extra gear. I think we're going to see them play much better than we've seen in recent weeks. And I think they're going to score 2 goals, 2-1 final score.
Ooh, we got 2-1 from Alex Stanek as well. I'm going to go with 3-1 for good measure. With a Harrison awful goal, we'll add one from Frederico Higuain, and I'm going to say Sanch is going to get one too. And I guess the last question for each of you is, what is going to be the next subversive message or symbol on Will Trapp's armband for an upcoming game?
Ooh, oh my goodness. Oh, let me think about this. I think it would be really awesome if he just put the initials of our future owner on his armband and just didn't explain it. Just like put initials on there and just sent crew Twitter into a frenzy trying to track down who that person was. That'd be really fun.
I'm going to say the same things, but not in initials, but in semaphore flags for sailing.
Ooh.
Well, if we're going to go with initials, I will say SDC is probably real easy. So let's go with RYR, respect your roots.
Ooh, that's like good. It. I like that.
Yep. I might have to go with Sam's on that one. I think that would be good, would be fitting. And Will, if you're listening to the show, which I'm sure you are as a regular listener, we know we can look at the analytics stuff on the Apple podcast. We see that you're downloading and listening week in and week out, and we appreciate if you can put it on there. You can use that. You don't have to give us credit, or maybe just a little bit of credit. Throw a hashtag MRPod next to the RYR, and we'll be all right. But that should do us for this week. Gentlemen, any other final thoughts? Anyone want to get a blurb in here before we shut it down?
Anthony Precourt, please just save the crew. I am so sick of this. We both know this is going to end with the crew being saved. Just get it done, please. Please. Thank you.
Listen to the man, Anthony. Patrick, Sam, it's always a pleasure. You too, Alex. And for all three of them, this is Bart saying, we'll see you next week. Bye, buddies.